I've known Moses since he was about 15 or 16, and I first met him when he was orbiting round a band that my son, who was about the same age, put together with Jesus, called the Epsilons. They were the worst punk band I have ever said, but you couldn't fault them for fantastic noise and exuberance. And Moses wanted to be in the band, but even Moses wasn't up to par. Oh, God. And I think the really sad thing that about him dying now is that he was just beginning to turn his life around. He'd calmed down a lot. As others have said, he'd got a place to live. He was doing some really creative stuff. You know, and it's really such a shame that this wonderful, eccentric son of Sheffield that most of us spent half our time trying to avoid is now gone, you know. I'm very sad. I was a kind of honorary auntie, I think.
Cheers. Oh. Yeah? My name's Mark, I'm from London, and I actually only met Moses one time, which is amazing that I've come all this way to this funeral, whatever, homage to his life, celebration of his life. But in that one time, we spent the whole day together, me and some other people, and he touched me. He's a very open-hearted guy. From the moment we first met, completely open-hearted, and I think he was like that with everyone. I'm not feeling any extra special because of it, but I just really appreciated him as a person, his experiences. We talked for ages that day. To my eternal regret, I never kept in contact with him. It's just something you don't conceive is going to happen. Someone with that life force, it's going to end at some point. You just think it's going to continue. I just assumed I'd see him again at some point. Little more I can say, but just a fantastic guy. Fantastic guy.
It was a treat to have known Moses. He took us to some like amazing places. We were nearly going to go and live on the like top of Bradfield, which is like really one of the highest points in Sheffield, isn't it? And it's really madly cold, and like this place is next to a nunnery, and we were going to live there.
It's down to Moses.
Yeah, he took us some really beautiful places. So like, you know,
to Moses, we'll miss you. We loved you, Anarchy, love and light, mate.
Yeah,
and always
absolute pleasure to have known him.
I first met Moses, I think, in late 84 as part of the Sheffield Anarchist Group. And then there was a period of time when we kind of parted ways, and me and Moses weren't particularly especially close, but I always regarded him as a very good friend. But sometimes he was such a pain in the arse that I used to duck into a shop doorway if I saw him come in, so that wait till he'd gone past, you know what I mean? But maybe the last 10 years or so, I've been more happy to see him every time. Like, oh, it's Moses, he's going to rant at me, it's going to be totally bizarre, and he's never going to have a moderate opinion about anything, and he knows something about everything. So I used to enjoy that, and then he'd always like hail me as a representative of the true working class, which, you know, like was kind of sweet of him. I'm going to miss him hugely, and Sheffield for me has become less interesting, and I never expected Moses to make me cry.
I'm Compost John from York. I met Moses in December 2009 through the We Love the Earth Centre group, and I think I had an argument with him on that first day, and then he was doing his rants through email to the people on the email list, and several people said they wanted to leave the list because Moses was on it and involved. So I emailed him and said, look, really, we've got to try and all pull together with this one, and we've got to speak the same language as the people who are wanting to develop the site. If we're going to get anywhere with them, we've got to calm down and not be quite so antagonistic, and I recognised that we had quite a bit in common, but we had a lot of differences too. But I gradually became friends with him, and through Facebook I've become very close with him, and we used to chat on Facebook, and he used to share stuff about his housing and his mental health and all sorts of things. And then I saw his photographs, and I just I thought it was fantastic. And I'm actually quite angry that he's died, because I really would have liked to get to know him a bit better, a lot better. And I can't pretend that might have been easy, but he was such an interesting character. I feel I've been robbed of an unknown potential.
Okay, the one thing that struck me most in the service, one phrase summed it up for me, and explain why I bothered to turn up today, was the guy had guts. Moses had guts, and that's what I respected about him. He was a gutsy guy. He stood up for it. Whatever he believed in, he stood up for it, and that's inspirational. I've also seen him being the first guy to dance at parties, and that's also inspirational. So in some ways I've been jealous of his freedom, the freedom of his nature. That's it.
I'd like to say that I thought Moses was a legend, and that's why I've come all the way from Ireland to his funeral.
Right. I think it's a real nice privilege to, you know, come here, but and everyone's got their own story, and for me I shall always remember him as someone who was an unsung, strung out, highly strung person who knows how to string things out. And yeah, there's using that same sort of word, that's what it describes him for me. So, and nice to have met you. Nice to have met you. That's all, you know, a real privilege to have met him.
Well, I was when I was a Green councillor until last May, that was, I was, my special responsibility was the city centre. So I used to go to all the policing meetings in the city centre to coordinate what was going on in the city centre, to hear from the ambassadors, the police, the social, you know, the children support units and all that sort of thing, alcohol support units. And when any event would come up, the issue of it's going to happen, what are we going to do about Moses? So that was always the big issue. And so Moses, from that side, from the establishment point of view, was seen as a pain in the ass. But I also knew that Moses was well respected, because some of the information that we got was in a help with some of the issues that were happening in the city centre. You know, the really vulnerable people in the city centre. Moses was able to sort of provide information that actually gave them protection. So I think he did a fantastic job. Although it was a very difficult relationship the police had with him, he was well respected. So the police, you know, got a lot of information about sort of dodgy things that were happening, and it because of the circles he worked in. I used to also go to the city centre community forum meetings, at which Moses would turn up, and I would be at the pre-meeting in the morning with the police and the community police officers, who were always jittery. How are you going to deal with this? And I always used to try and make a beeline to sit with Moses, however sort of cantankerous he was at that time, and it was very difficult. And I was able to sort of help him sort of say what needed to be said about what was going on, and the police felt that they could listen without feeling threatened. So, you know, it was chaotic and very difficult with Moses there, but he provided an enormously important input. Of course, the other thing is that famous photograph he provided of young people pissing on the memorial in the city centre that got the front page of the Mail. And that was Moses' photograph. And I think that was a fantastic coup, because Moses was, in spite of himself, was very anti-people taking sort of huge quantities of you know, liquids like, you know, alcohol or drugs. You know, he was very aware that that was a huge problem, but particularly alcohol, and it was a huge problem. And he just felt this was being brushed under the carpet. And as a result, there were lots and remain lots of people that live on the streets in the city centre whose problems aren't being dealt with, and who he feels that the police tactics towards them are unacceptable. And, you know, a civilised society wouldn't allow that to happen, but it is, and Moses would speak up for them, and I think he was fantastic.
Didn't some students get prosecuted?
Yeah, that student did get prosecuted, and I never had a conversation with Moses afterwards to find out, you know, what his thoughts were on that. But yeah, I mean, in a way, it was overkill. But once you get the Daily Mail behind you, it's very difficult for the you know, the legislature, as it were, to actually say, you know, to actually say, be. Try and understand the context that this took place in, i.e. a city centre where there's a huge number of nightclubs and drinking establishments who just ignore the law. And yeah, that was the irony, that Moses was there trying to sort of make sure that there was some organisation in that chaos, that people did allow other people, the people who lived in the city centre, he wanted them to be able to have a good night's sleep so they could get up to go to work the next morning. So he was an incredibly sort of complex person who was involved in campaigns that, you know, are complicated for the general public to understand, but you've got to have been there to have understood where he was coming from.
Even though I think, like, Moses was an absolute pain in the arse quite often, he also had a very sublime part to him, and he completely knew what love was, and I think anybody would say that. And I think, you know, today people, you know, talked about forgiving him for being such a pain, and that was why, and it is true, and he will be missed for that, definitely.
As you know, we're all here to celebrate the life of Moses, but we had many more years in him yet, and I think that's a sad thing, that he lived his life while he was here, but he had a lot more to give and a damn more fighting to do. But we just want you all to raise a toast to the one and only, the legend that was Moses. And sorry, while we're here, this lady here has worked non-stop organising the funeral and the wake, so I would like to propose a toast to Sam, please. Sam. Right, we have an amusing special little something to read out here, which is typical of Moses, and it is a solicitor's letter that is about an incident that happened at the end of November, I think it was. Beginning of November. And we'd like to read it to you.
Dear Mr. Wallace, read your instructions, outcome of your case. You will recall that you were arrested on the 1st of November 2010 in Sheffield City Centre in respect of an allegation of possession with a firearm. You were transported to Bridge Street Police Station, whereupon your detention was authorised by the custody sergeant. You requested the services of a solicitor, and Mr. Abbas Yonis attended upon you on this occasion. Upon your arrival, we attended... upon the investigating officer, a PC 1095 Peter Hallett, and obtained disclosure. We were informed by PC Hallett that the police had received information at 0200 hours on Thursday the 28th of October 2010 that a message had been posted on the Twitter account which belonged to you. Officers disclosed that a post stated,
"Dear cunts of Sheffield, we have just taken hold of two AK-47s with enough bullets to deal, and we joke not at all. Our time is soon."
It wasn't then night that intelligence was received by Crime Stoppers. Officers disclosed to us that you were a political activist who had previously passed yourself off as a journalist and had a number of previous convictions for minor offences. Officers did disclose that you were regularly seen within the city centre. Having received intelligence that you were in Sheffield city centre on the 1st of November 2010, you were subsequently arrested and, when cautioned, replied,
"Is that it? It was just a laugh."
Officers disclosed that a house search had been conducted, but nothing had been found. You had previously allegedly made threats to cut off someone's head, and had... orders convictions in the past. PC Hallett stated, in essence, that he had intended to ask you what you had meant by the post of your Twitter account and how many people could access it. We then attended upon you and relayed the disclosure as outlined above. The constituent elements of possession of a firearm included a possible defence to such an allegation were explained to you. We then on to explain the caution and the implications of you exercising your right to silence, in particular the circumstances in which adverse inferences could be drawn. We then went to obtain your instructions. You stated that you had a number of illnesses, including bipolar disorder, and that you were a paranoid schizophrenic. You stated that at the time of the alleged offence, you were on the computer and just messing about on the internet. You stated that you had placed a post on your Twitter account, however, you had no intention of carrying out your threats. You stated that you were not in the possession of an AK-47 or bullets. You stated that you were not a violent person and had no intention of carrying out the threats. You further instructed that only people on your Twitter account could access your tweets, but since you attacked cunt, this could be viewed by thousands of people. In view of your instructions and the disclosure provided, we advised you to put forward your account as per your instructions for the following reasons. 1. To avoid the possibility of adverse inferences being drawn. 2. By providing an account, you may avoid the possibility of further action being taken against you. And 3. You clearly denied the offence, and this was your opportunity to put forward your defence at the first available instance. You agreed to all the advice given. In due course, you were interviewed at length, during the course of which you denied your involvement in this offence as per your instructions. You will recall that throughout the interview, whoever it is, from Sheffield was also present, acting as your appropriate adult. Following the interview, you were in fact released with no further action taken in respect of this matter. This now brings your matter to an end, and we trust to your satisfactory conclusion. May we take this opportunity to inform you that, unfortunately, we do not undertake cases where complaints are made against the police.
And that was his final podcast. If anybody wants to come up while we've got the microphone and say a few words, I know John wants to come and say something on someone's behalf. But take this opportunity to come up, tell your tales. I'll tell one, actually. The best tale I ever heard Moses say was that he buried a tank under Park Hill Flats for when civil war broke out. So if you want to go and dig it up, now might be a good time.
Hi there. My name's John Cosson, or Compost John, from York. And I'm Moses in December 09 through We Love the Earth Centre, and fell out immediately, and I grew to love him, and I'm very, very moved by his passing. I've got a friend in Sheffield called Ali Hayward, and she can't be here because she's a mature student and finds travelling around quite difficult because she's a wheelchair user. You'll have seen her on some demos. She's a big lady, and she wanted me to write this in the book. There isn't a book. So, Moses died too soon, leaving a world the worse for his loss, but the better for him living here at all. Thank you, Moses. True beauty will never be forgotten. Love, Ali. Thank you.
Tyrann saw our sweat, well known by Queen, and I knew Moses, certainly as an acquaintance for many years. But anyway, I'd like to dedicate this song to him after seeing it, so I didn't think of bringing it back on track. And it goes like this. I'm sure you like it, it's by Neil Young. Well, I heard, I saw the knight in armour coming, saying something about a drag queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archer split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned-out basement, the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a placement, hoping for a placement, when the sun burst through the sky and in the tray. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. Thinking about what the boyfriend had said, I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what the boyfriend had said, I was hoping it was a lie. And I saw the silver spaceships flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and rainbow colours flying all among the chosen ones. All in a dream, all in a dream, 'cause the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seat to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seat to a new home in the sun. Hope you enjoyed it.
I didn't know Moses well. I only met him a couple of times at most. However, it's not actually a memory of Moses that I'll share with you, it's a memory of Sam and what she actually told me about. I once bumped into Moses at, I think it was Sheffield Pride, and he found out I knew Sam. And he turned around and said to me, when you're next to you, tell her I say hello. And when I actually saw Sam, her exact words were something along the lines of, you know, wherever I've gone in life, wherever I've been, there's always been you, sat kicking my arse somewhere. It was a fantastic man, and the thing that strikes me, especially today, is how many people turned up, and given some of the stories that I've heard of him, that's quite a turnout. But the other thing is how many people he could touch just through a couple of minutes talking to him. I only spent at most an hour just chatting with him one night in the Globe. And he's left an impression on me that will last years and years to come. It's a shame that he's gone when he has, and he'll be dearly missed.
Hello, my name's Bernard Little. I was, until last May, one of the Green Councillors for the ward of the city centre. That covered also Sharon, but my responsibility among the three councillors was the city centre itself. And I would go to many, many meetings with the community police officers and the social workers and the various organisations who were involved in coordinating events within the city centre. Now, you can well imagine, we spent a disproportionate amount of our time at those meetings listening to police officers wondering how they were going to deal with Moses. So he did a fantastic job in sort of creating a lot of turbulence in the city centre, getting people to think about issues, i.e. people who are the most vulnerable people in the city, the street drinkers, the people who had severe mental health problems. He spoke up for those people in a way that I think that most people in this room couldn't do. And he actually had an enormous impression on the way that the city centre was organised. So, yes, they did listen to him. One of the strategies I discussed one time with one of the police officers when they were expecting a big demonstration in the city centre was, you know, if he was going to turn up, how were they going to deal with it? Because I'm sure they would sort of bring in sort of mounted police, extra police officers to, in anticipation that he was going to cause trouble. And one of the ideas that they had was to have decoy demonstrations in other parts of the city, or in South Yorkshire. And, you know, we came up with some bizarre ideas as to how to deal with somebody who they regarded as a huge troublemaker. But he did do it in an enormous amount in the city centre. I don't know if you all remember the photograph that got to the front page of the Daily Mail, the picture of the young students pissing on the war memorial in the city centre. That was Moses' photograph. And I felt so proud of him. The police were so proud of him. Everybody was proud of him. Sure, community groups were proud of him. People in the city centre felt feel appalled about what is happening in that city centre. And that was the sort of thing that he would do. Off the wall, but, you know, no one else could do it but him. So I think in losing Moses, we've lost a huge person for the city. You know, the dynamic of that city centre is going to change enormously. Who else is going to speak up for the dispossessed, the most vulnerable? Now we've got now Moses isn't there. I think it's now an issue that we as individuals must now address and not allow the issues that he was concerned with go away. Thank you.
I hope you'll forgive me for talking again after having said so much already. But there's two things I wanted to say. One's quite serious, and then the other is this kind of long, I think, funny story. I think one of the key things about Moses, and Gillian kind of alluded to this, was that he challenged us. He challenged us all at a very deep level. And he was kind of in your face with that challenge. And I remember one time him saying, you know, when there was all kinds of difficult stuff going on, and he said, look, you call yourself a caring community, you say that you're a movement that's dedicated to peace and justice, but you can't look after me. And, you know, I mean, at one level you could sort of say, well, actually, there was a lot of us running around trying to look after him at that time. But at another level it was true that we failed him. And his life didn't need to have been as difficult as it was. And had the system, or had we all been able to give him the kind of care that he needed, he could have turned his life around a lot quicker than he did. So, that's one thing. I've spent a lot of time in court with various people. I've spent a lot of time in court with Moses. But there was one time that was honestly the funniest time. You know, I really enjoyed myself. And he was being done for assault. There were two security guards on the job centre that were accusing him of assault. And they said that he'd bit one of them on the arm. And he admitted that he had bit this guy on the arm. That was true. But he said that actually they assaulted him, and he bit him on the arm in self-defence. This was his story. So, you know, we're all sort of set up, and we had all the interviews with the lawyer, and they asked for the CCTV. And the very day before the court case, we got to see this CCTV. And sure enough, it told the story that Moses was telling. Okay? But he just walked into there. The security guards didn't like him because he'd caused trouble in there in the past. Hard to believe, I know, but they ran at him, and one of them got his arm round Moses' neck and was throttling him, and so in self-defense, he bit him. And so So we went to court, and these two security, you know, the whole thing goes on. You've got 12 people in the jury and all this, and it's all this legal bollocks going on. And then the security guards come in, and the first one starts to tell his story, and you know, how Moses sort of attacked. And then they showed the video. So we're all sat in there watching this video, the judge and the jury and all of this. And at the end of it, they say, well, it's not like you said, is it, really? And the security guard goes, well, no, not really. Well, then the other security guard comes in. Now, this is the one that actually caused all the rumpus. He comes in, he's an idiot anyway. He was wearing camouflage, big boots. He looked like a thug. So, and he tells his story about how, you know, Moses ran at him, tried to push him over, he staggered back a few paces, and then they managed to get hold of him and push him out of the door, and then Moses bit him on the arm. So, of course, he's telling this, and then the defence lawyer, he starts, he says, in your statement you said, and he gets him to embellish this story, and you know, get it. And we're all of us, we've all watched the video, we all know what happened, so it was really hard not to laugh, I didn't want to get myself thrown out of court, but you were watching this guy digging himself deeper and deeper into a hole and telling this huge embellished story about how Moses had attacked him. And then at the end of it, and even the judge, you know, at that point, and then we watched the film again. And then you can watch this man's face, you know, as he's watching through this film. I'm thinking, well, what an idiot. How come he didn't watch the film beforehand, you know, before he comes in here and starts doing it? Anyway, that case got adjourned. And then we were back to the lawyers talking about wrongful arrest and all of that stuff. That was the irony of the whole story, of course. Moses got, and it was a serious story, because at that point he'd had a number of offences. He was in serious danger of going to prison, but I'd managed to get him off the previous time. But had he gone down on this one, he'd got caught up with the previous one and this one, and he would definitely have gone to prison. So the irony is, he got off and he was saved by CCTV. He spent his life campaigning against CCTV, and that's probably why he hasn't told this story too often.
I'd like to say a few words in commemoration and in celebration of Moses. About 13 years ago, quite a few people in Sheffield became extremely alarmed and angered by what the British government and the US government was doing in our name and in the name of the United Nations to the people of Iraq, with sanctions on Iraq, which, according to many UN reports, were killing one child every 5 or 6 minutes, depending on which UN report. This was for 12 solid years. The total death toll of just the children in that country were hundreds of thousands as a result, 600,000-700,000 as a result of sanctions which were perpetrated on Iraq in the name of the United Nations. So we set up an organisation called the Sheffield Campaign Against War in the Gulf to try and campaign against the sanctions on Iraq. And we organised a delegation to Iraq, which went out there in the year 2000. There was nobody who was a more loyal and militant supporter of that campaign than Mark Moses Wallace. He was on every demonstration. There is a photograph that I've brought and just put down the front, which shows him carrying one of the banners. The particular thing I wanted to mention was that there was nobody who wanted more to go on that delegation to Iraq than Moses. There's nobody who had more right to go because of his unswerving and energetic support for the campaign. But we had a big discussion amongst ourselves, and we felt that Moses was sometimes, as we know, unable to keep his temper. And if he saw an injustice, he would be likely to fight to resist and remonstrate and demonstrate and protest. The problem was that in Iraq, at the time of Saddam Hussein, that was a very dangerous situation to not be in full control of your emotions. And we felt that actually it would be a dangerous thing for Moses to come with us to Iraq, to be a potential danger to himself and to the security of the rest of the delegation. And we had to actually sit down with Moses and say that we felt that it was actually not really safe for him to come with us. And the great thing about Moses was that he was able to understand this, and he was able to see objectively that it actually was a wise and sensible thing for us to say to him, it was not safe for you to come with us. And many people, if they were turned down like this, would have taken umbrage, would have felt really personally insulted and would have borne a grudge. But Moses did not. He completely accepted this. And I think that showed, actually, something about the maturity and the wisdom of the bloke. And those are perhaps not qualities which would normally be attached to him, but I think that he showed a great deal of wisdom and a great deal of maturity in that situation. And so I just wanted to recollect on that and show another thing about that whole story, and that was how much Moses felt in his heart as well as in his mind the struggles and sufferings of people, not just here in Sheffield, not just here in Britain, but all over the world. I don't think there's anybody in this room who would have felt more moved and more exhilarated and more horrified by the current developments that are taking place in Egypt than Moses. It is a great shame that he is not alive to actually witness these events. He would certainly be feeling that he was there in Tahrir Square with the protesters. And that shows something about Moses, a quality of Moses, which I think all of us should try and emulate. We should be as sensitive and as moved and as close and as enraged as Moses would have been by these events. We all have a responsibility to the victims of our government's policies here in this country and around the world. We know that Britain, along with the United States, are the two main external powers that have propped up, installed, armed and protected the brutal regimes that are now tottering and falling one by one in the Middle East. And so therefore I'd like to salute Moses and remember him and wish him that may he rest in peace.
Service, because I thought that might be a little bit insensitive, but his bloody bitch of a mother isn't here now, so I don't care. There's a saying that you can't choose, you choose your friends. What is it? You can choose your friends but not your family. I disagree with that. I think every one of us here he chose as his family because he had a crap upbringing with someone who didn't give a toss about him, who he wanted to make amends with and didn't get a chance. And even he hadn't even been dead an hour and his mother couldn't speak a good word against him, and that gets me here, so she can F right off. Sorry, but we've seen the other side of the grieving widow, and it's, yeah, not nice. So I don't care if I'm speaking ill of his mother, but there you go. But every one of us here he chose as his family, because I think that's what he wanted more than anything, to be accepted and loved for the person that he was. And we certainly did. He used to tell everybody that I was his other half, and he was the father of my two kids, but I can assure you I never went there. We're Peggy and Pat, and he was our Frank, you see. But I think it is really important that he did love his friends. He really, really loved his friends, and they were his family, because he didn't have family to speak of, and every one of you that's come out today is a family that he never had, and you should give yourselves a pat on the back for that, and I think that's really important to say, and I'll shut up now.
Just picking up from Dave what you were saying about CCTV, I have a story about this. That's actually what I do for a living. I'm part of the dreaded system. Moses bloody loved it, actually. So the amount of times I got emails about where the cameras, where are they, this, that and everything else. So I often like to taunt him and send him messages telling him that I am actually the system, so there we go. But he did love CCTV.
Does anybody else want to say anything? Or can we turn it off and put the music back on?
Can I ask that the music isn't put on, or if it is put on, it's put on quietly so that we talk to each other?
Yes.
That's what I want to hear.
And if anyone hasn't noticed, there's some films running down here of him, which are quite hilarious. So get, come and have a look.
Hi, folks. But yeah, I just wanted to say, I thought a lot of Moses, he made you think outside the box. And that was a big thing, you know, to shoot you out of your complacency.
Who's not come here tonight for various reasons I won't go into. So I've described Moses as an alternative state agent for squatted buildings, and this is quite an impressive thing to achieve. I've appeared with him on a selection of videos being played there, wandering around buildings that I don't think I really put much effort in, apart from turning up on the day and ambling around aimlessly. But I think it's some kind of an achievement. I did do some pretty strange things, though. I remember him having a mobile phone that he talked to people on without it actually being on, which is probably not the sort of thing that... No, probably strike that from the record. Won't have that in the newspaper article. But No, it's achieved a lot, and you can sort of... Maybe you need that kind of insanity to do what, have the amount of conviction that he had behind the various strange activities he did. Okay. Yeah, okay.
I remembered him, you know, for well over a decade, and ever since demonstrations like Rage Against the Cage and Reclaim the Streets in the centre of Sheffield, and how he was so influential in organising these things, and also squats like the Matilda and Peace in the Park and so on and so forth. And the amazing thing was, you never quite knew where, you know, he would pop up, you know, how intensive an urban explorer he was. I was just looking now on the videos in tribute to him on the laptop over there, you know, and I noticed he actually went, you know, with a group of others from here out to explore this derelict ship that's docked somewhere near Rhyl on the North Wales coast. And I know that ship because I pass it on the train whenever I go to and from Ireland, but I had no idea he actually went out there, you know, and tried to get on it, because it's all closed off and, you know, sort of, you know, barbed wire and I think often guarded and so on. But, you know, I've got to put my hand out to him, you know, for such a bravado, you know, you know, and going to such lengths, you know, in terms of urban exploration, you know, as well as everything else in the way of the activism.
He hit the urban exploration scene like an atomic bomb. He went out photographing bricks and old factories, and he called them concentration camps for the workers. People were scared to death of him. To the uninitiated, he was a total load of bollocks, but to me, he was a character, and I loved him for it. In the end.
I mean, I first got to know Moses through MySpace, where he was a 99-year-old female called 0742, and I actually thought he was a woman for quite a long time, because we just talked online. And then I met him when he turned up at a photo exhibition I did at the Washington, and we just talked all night, and he told me some amazing stories about the kind of Sheffield scene since the 80s, some of which were true, some of which I'm a bit less sure about. I was really impressed by the fact that he told me he was a founder member of the Human League, and he used to hold egg boxes on their scout hut they used to practice in the 80s, and And then he told me that he'd shared a flat with Jarvis Cocker for a year, and they'd written Common People together. I actually believed it at the time. It was only a couple of months later when people started coming up to me saying, "I heard that you've bought Moses a camera and you're holding a photo exhibition with him," that I kind of started to realise that some of the stuff that he came out with wasn't quite true. But I remember not long after that time, he was trying to arrange to meet up with me at Lodge Moor, and so finally we did. We got out to Lodge Moor. We went out there kind of late afternoon, and we just sat at the bottom of the garden of the Three Merry Lads. We took a bottle of wine each, two of us and Steve Withington, and we just sat there for about 3 hours, just waiting for the sun to go down, just watching the countryside and the light. And it's something I would never normally do myself, but he really kind of showed you sometimes how to slow down and just appreciate, you know, what's there. So yeah, we had quite a few adventures together. We fell out last November over the incident where he was raided by armed police, which he blamed on me, which I had no idea what was going on, and I kind of cut off contact with him after that. Just because, you know, these things happened from time to time, which were just pretty hard to deal with. And, you know, I kind of thought at the time that I'd be happy not to hear from him again, but I'm really missing him now. It's, you know, real shame that he's gone.
Paul Cantrell, met Moses through Flickr. We're all pain in the arse, but enjoyed his company and we'll miss him.
I don't know what to say, really, except that I can't believe he's dead, and I'm sure he's going to turn up here any time, so, you know, it just doesn't seem right that he's not here, but I'm just going to see what happens, really.
No, not at the moment. I did say something, I was telling somebody about how Moses told me that there's a big Cold War bunker buried under Crooks Valley Park, but there isn't.
A very, very good man and thoughtful.
What do I want to say about Moses, indeed? He gave brilliant fashion advice. He really did, that's true. What else? I don't even know where to start with Moses. The last thing I said to Moses was, he was on his hospital bed, and he said to me, Sam, get out the room, please, because I want to do Emily right now. And my last words to Moses were, fuck you. So, there you go. I do love him, I do, but it was fuck you. There you go. I want that as the main quote of the day. What we wanted to do as well, I don't know if this is even relevant, on his tracheotomy we wanted to have a spinning bow tie, because he was our Frank, wasn't he?
He was Frank Butcher, and we were Peggy.
We're the grieving widows.
But no, the last conversation I had with him, we'd been up to see him on the Friday when he was still on the ward and he was still with it, but very, very ill. And he said to me that he wanted me to go and fetch his mother, to tell his mother that he was ill and make sure she came to visit him, so I promised him I would. And then on the Saturday, I was on a bus going into town and my phone rang. And it was, hiya, it's Moses. And I went, hello, you all right? And he went, yeah, what are you doing? I'm just on my way to intensive care. What are you doing on Monday? He says, I'm going to see your mother. All right, just checking, all right, see ya. And that was the last time I spoke to him. Just as if he was doing nothing. Oh, just on my way to intensive care. But, yeah, so that's the last conversation I had with him. And I'm waffling. I'm rambling.
Recorder.
The one thing that sort of struck me is sort of how he went. I think knowing Moses now, sort of crazy as sort of lifestyle was, you'd always knew that one day you'd get the call that he'd been in some abandoned warehouse and fallen through a skylight or something, and you wouldn't be sort of shocked by that. And then I think to sort of see how he has gone, you know, you see people as being almost indestructible and then flu gets them, you can't really understand it. And you know, I'm sure whatever it is now, on his next life he probably will fall through a skylight and someone else will get the call, but yeah, it's all still sinking in.